Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
A big-time wide receiver in the NFL. My next guest is a six-time Pro Bowler, 2012 All-Pro, and the host of the I Am Athlete podcast. He is eligible for the NFL Hall of Fame in 2023, but right now, he is my guest on the episode of Think About It. He is Brandon Marshall. Hi, Brandon. Welcome to season two of Think About It. I'm so happy that you're here. One of my favorite things is to get to know people I've never met before and have an open conversation about. Right. And it's something that you've been doing for a really long time. So I'm really excited to start our chat.
Yes.
And, you know, take it wherever we kind of feel like it. So welcome.
I love it. I appreciate you having me. You know, we're in an interesting space right now where, you know, it's the time for the creators. So being able to have our own conversations on our terms is an extremely interesting time.
Yes, yeah. And something that comes with a heavy pressure, right? To being that role model and being open to criticism, something that you've experienced a lot in your career, I've experienced and still do. And I wanted to ask you, from that perspective, from your college years going into NFL, being, you know, on the spotlight so much, and then transitioning into a space where a lot of your peers, a lot of other athletes in other sports get lost.
The sport has defined us as athletes.
Yeah.
And obviously there's been so many along the journey that's broken through and said, no, we want more, we are more. We have to always challenge ourselves. It's like, no, who am I today?
Yeah.
Right? How am I growing?
Yeah.
I compete, but I'm into media.
Yeah.
Or I'm into art. I'm into fashion. I'm a mom. I'm a father. I'm a husband. I'm a wife.
Yeah.
Right? There's so much more to the athlete today. So I think we have an amazing opportunity to continue to redefine what an athlete is.
Yeah. Can you expand a little bit more on, in 2011, when you were able to really go out there and talk about your struggles?
Wow. So 10 years and almost 6 months ago, it was my first, like, you know, time back in front of the media.
Mm-hmm.
I played in the NFL for 13 years.
Yeah.
And I played at an extremely high level. And all pro, Pro Bowl. Some people may say that I have Hall of Fame numbers.
And you definitely do, by the way.
Well, I highlight this, you know, because it's a part of this story. And I spent 3 months at McLean Hospital. I was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. Mm-hmm. The best way to describe borderline personality disorder is emotional disorder, right? Something can happen in this room, and we all feel it. It's valid. It provokes a lot of emotion. But someone who's living with borderline personality disorder that's not treated or dealt with, it may take them longer to get back down to baseline, right? Mm-hmm. So when I first got there, I had to go through a clinical evaluation. I had to go through a neurological evaluation to see what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Through that, they said, Brandon, this is what we believe you are dealing with. And I entered in this program, and we began to work Monday through Friday. You know, I was on the campus of McLean Hospital from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. in self-assessment. It's a form of group therapy, mentalization therapy. A lot of people think black and white. They don't have the skills and tools to be able to self-regulate or have the rationale to be able to process. So I had to go through mentalization therapy. That's another form of group therapy, cognitive behavior therapy, dialectical behavior therapy, one-on-one with the great Dr. Gunderson. And it totally changed my life. Football was my plan A, my plan B, my plan C. It defined who I was.
Mm-hmm.
halfway through that program is when I finally realized why God put me on this earth. He put me on this earth to help bridge the gap in the mental health community. I knew that. I knew that the football field was now my platform. I knew that playing in front of 70,000 people live, 4 million people tuned in, that was my opportunity to stand up and say, listen, yes, I am this great football player, but let me tell you about these 100 million Americans that are personally dealing with something, whether anxiety, bipolar, borderline, depression, or just they don't know how to deal with stress. What makes us great, what makes us a part of the 1% of the world, me and you, right, and so many other athletes, is our ability to mask pain, our ability to pick ourselves up from failure.
Yeah.
Like, we are great at rebounding from failure. We fail more than we actually succeed.
Well, that's our practice.
That's
what, from, you know, when you were 6 years old, wanted to be a football player, I was 7 years old. I was, you know, at 8 and 9 years old, I was playing in my living room in my in the apartment where it was literally shaped almost like a tennis court, at least in my imagination.
Right.
I thought it was, I was playing in Wimbledon against Steffi Graf, and that was what I thought. Nobody taught me.
You know how many people can learn from that?
Yeah.
That's visualization training.
Emotional practice is, I started doing it when I was 24 years old.
Mm.
So from seven to that, it was about reaching goal in tennis, about, you know, getting the result there. And it came at a very heavy price. You know, I talked about this particular moment in 2020 because it was the first time I went on the court after the pandemic break and I was enjoying myself. Like, I'm 31 years old with all the titles and people are like, what are you talking about? What about when you were winning Grand Slam? I was like, yeah, it was nice. I mean, it was great, mm-hmm. but people only remember the win. They don't remember everything else with it.
Right.
And I said, I've never enjoyed myself truly, like where I can sit down and say, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be here. And it was like a shocking news. And then at the same time, it was like, well, what is the secret? You know, what is the secret of you finally enjoying? It's not about a secret. It's about, you know, going there and having these conversations with yourself about, like, what's really important for me.
There is a secret. Let's share it with them. Like, we know this as athletes. We're part of that 1%. The secret is mindfulness, mm-hmm. is being present.
Yeah.
The most powerful place that we can be in is present. That's what makes us great as athletes. But we hone so much into the skill and the mastering of our craft that we're not really enjoying the process.
Yes.
Everybody's focused on the destination,
yes.
and at the journey. So for you, you know, that happened recently. And for me, it was probably when I was like 29. And it was after McLean Hospital when I start reading more about monks and mindfulness and meditation, where I was like, holy shit, like, it's about, this is the best part.
Yeah.
Out here, 110 degrees, you know, I dropped the ball, but just that want to of like, let me try it again, let me get it again.
Yeah.
Like, that's what makes it great, is the process, is the journey. We are in these positions because we're able to, you know, just deal with stress and still perform at extremely high level, whether it's financial stress, relationship, you know, career goals, success, failure. But what happens is where we place ourselves on a pedestal, others place us on a pedestal. So now we become gladiators and we're not supposed to show any signs of weakness.
Yeah.
And to me, while we're redefining what athlete is, to me, that is the athlete, being vulnerable, being real, being transparent. Naomi Osaka standing up and saying, you know, I deal with social anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that raw emotion is speaking to the other 15 million Americans, maybe 50 million or 100 million worldwide that are dealing with the same thing.
Yeah. So there's, you know, there's this judgment that comes from this generation to this generation, and then the younger generation and our generation don't understand them. Like,
right.
we're like, why would you say that?
Right.
Like, that's not considering that's not compassion. That's not what's going to help mm-hmm. somebody to be that. So
right.
we have, you know, coaches like in your team, when you had coaches that are older and they have their way of teaching is like no pain, no gain. I hate that stuff.
Right.
I hate this sentence. What do you mean no pain, no gain?
Right.
It's not pain. It doesn't mean that it's going to make you grow. Challenges and stuff, you
right.
grow. How you approach those challenges, that's going to make you grow. But not necessarily going through
Was
pain.
That the number one like saying in sports like for like 50, 60 years?
I had
years?
The t-shirt.
I know.
I had a t-shirt, no pain, no gain. So
right.
Nike is one of my favorite t-shirts.
Hold on, listen. That's so cool that you said that. Training, the biggest moment of my career, the transition from college to the NFL, combine training. I'm out in Arizona, Brett Fisher, legendary athletic performance coach. And I remember going to the hill one day out there in Phoenix, and I'm running up a hill. And
in the heat. Once I've been in
You've
training
been
in Phoenix.
Oh my goodness, it's brutal. But here's the deal. I didn't feel any pain after this one particular workout.
Yeah.
And I went to Brett after. I said, I need to do extra. And all I kept thinking about, I'm not in pain. I do not hurt.
Yeah.
I need to do more.
Yeah.
And he looked at me. He said, Brandon, let me ask you a question. He said, have you ever been to the Congo? And I said, no, I've never been to the Congo. And he said, I have. Let me navigate you through that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I literally was all wrapped up into, I got to feel the pain.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only way I'm going to accomplish my goals.
Yeah.
And I was totally wrong.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
A lot of things are come, let's say, easy for me to learn, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's, and I'm grateful for that. But when something doesn't work, you're like, oh my God, I'm not good enough. Mm-hmm. I may not wanna, you know, kind of try that.
Right.
But we still condition ourselves to failure. But at the same time, when you become successful, that failure becomes bigger, right? Like you become so conservative of not wanting to fail because you know what success is, and
that's
you're
right.
getting into this ways of doing that.
I tell the younger generation and younger athletes this, just people to approach failure and success the same way. They're both bad. Just be present, be mindful. That's what I always say. Just approach it the same way.
Yeah.
You know, you can't lose and drop your head, right? You can't win and hang from the rafters.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to be present. You got to be mindful. Of course, you're supposed to celebrate. Of course, what makes us great is understanding and, you know, okay, I took an L here. I lost here. What can I learn from that? You know, and there's emotions attached to that. But, like, there's a lot of athletes you see, it's like they're pouting when they lose. It breaks them. And then the same thing when they win. And that's not the way.
I've never talked about, because it recently happened, I played a tournament in Miami. And before Miami, I started to feel like I just don't want to be here.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want to play because I felt like I had to.
Mm.
You know, I had to go through it. I had to go through this pain, through stick it out. You're like, not to take a break because there's important tournaments come. I have to be there. I have to be there. And you learn about yourself on the go.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be something you learn more about yourself and adaptive, and you got to adapt. And I thought that I was strong enough
right.
to go through it, and I wasn't. I wasn't
right.
ready. I kept telling everybody, I don't want to play. And I was hoping somebody was going to stop me.
Right, 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 right.
And nobody did.
Right.
And I was the most alone I felt on the court.
Right.
I'm looking, and it's a viral clip right now because I walked off the court.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Take me back to that moment. Right, like how did you feel? And why is it so, like, it feels real to you right now?
Yeah, it is.
Why?
My son gave me this little card, Mama, do your best, right? And I was like, I have to do my best. I have to do, but my best in that moment was not what I could do that day. It was my best of the very, very best. That's how I judged that moment. That's what I felt like I had to do. And it put a lot of pressure on me. And the second point was, there's this boy, his name is Luke. He's one of the cutest kids, the most polite kid, and he's a really big fan of mine. So I got to know him better. I got to know his family well, and he's been coming to New York to see my matches. He's been coming to other tournaments. And I wanted, and I knew he was gonna come to that match. Mm-hmm. And I was like, do I just give up in that moment or not? So I thought about everybody else. I mean, you see, I'm going through it because I'm gonna cry, because it is real. And I want people to understand that those moments are much more significant in somebody's life than what you see. Mm. And I went on the court and I'm playing, and all I think about is, like, I just want to leave, but I can't. Like, I don't know if I can do it. I'm looking at everybody's like, please get me out of here. But nobody's going to do it, you know? And I just decided in one moment, I have to go. Like, I have to go, because I'll either have a panic attack on the court or I don't know what's going to happen to me. So I have to leave.
Right.
And I left, and I was to the point where, you know, I was driving in my car, and I was like, I have to be safe enough to not hurt myself. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how powerful that moment was for me.
Wow.
And, but what drove me to do that is I understood that I lost that feeling of me being happy on the court, and I have to learn how to find it back. Mm-hmm. And that meant taking a break and understanding, living through this feeling, working through this feeling, talking about this moment, because it will have to be there. Because
this was real. What was the most powerful part of that moment? What was the biggest takeaway for you?
I think the biggest takeaway was that I was strong enough to do what's best for me. I think that's something that I will look back and I'm learning from that moment. So I don't want to take it as a regret. But I think, and I hope, this moment maybe will help somebody else not to be in the same situation as I was. And that's power in it.
Let's Google your name right now. And what comes up is like someone said unacceptable.
Yeah.
Drops out.
Yeah.
It says disrespectful. That's what the media's narrative is, not knowing everything that went into this moment.
Yeah.
They don't understand all of this. So this is like a extremely powerful moment for you to highlight this.
Yeah.
Because you're going to help so many other people. You're a hero because you're actually, you're humanizing us. So thank you so much for being vulnerable on your show.
Right? Like, I wasn't expecting to do that today.
I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it, because like, this is exactly what we're talking about when we talk about mental health. Is like, you know, we see you, it's like, holy, that's her. Mm-hmm. Right? Oh my goodness. World number one in the world.
Yeah.
You know? Pro for 18 years. And to see you open up, it's like you're, and I don't know where you're at with this, but there's so many times I travel around the world and people are like, you saved my life, thank you, because of what you said. Like, literally, like, you saved my life.
Yeah. Those are the moments that make all everything worth for me.
Right.
It's not the titles, not the anything, not anything is the, first of the kids also,
right,
who look up to me and be like, I want to be like that. And I always say, no, be better.
Mm.
Don't be like me, be better.
I just want to say thank you. You know, for creating this space, creating this platform for us to have like these real conversations.
Yeah.
You were making me emotional going back to like those moments, man. And it's just, you know, we're in an awesome position. And I just, you know, I would just challenge you on your show to, you know, just continue to lean into those moments. It's like, man, your son is seeing you play. Why can't we just accept that we just have a bad day?
Yeah.
Meaning, like, there was a trigger for me one moment where I always felt like I had to be on when I walked into the facility.
Yeah.
Everybody's watching.
Yeah.
Even when it wasn't a game time, it's like all the coaches, all the trainers, the players, your teammates, you're just watching, like, how, what's the mood? How are you going to respond to this? You have to be perfect.
Yeah.
Every single day. And then something clicked. It was like, I'm not perfect. I'm not okay.
Yeah.
And it was so freeing to me because I would actually walk into the facility, freaking marriage, wife, family, mom, dad, you know, other stresses, bodies hurting. And I'm like, I don't have it today. And I would walk in, people like, you know, Brandon, how you doing today? Hey, good morning. I'm like, hey, I don't feel good, but hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
With a smile on my face because it was freeing for me to tell somebody it wasn't okay. I felt good walking in and someone asked me, you're okay? I'm like, nope, not okay. Shit is really stressful right now, but I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, and then I learned when I was honest with people, especially like in that circle, because I really didn't care about the outside circle. They gave me, you know, the space to not be okay.
Yeah. What I hear a lot is this one is, well, you signed up for it. Mm. No, I didn't. No, I didn't. I didn't sign up for none of this shit.
Right.
I didn't sign up for none of this shit because when I was 7-year-old kid, 8-year-old kid, 9-year-old kid, I was like, oh yeah, well, that's what I'm signing up for, social media shit.
Right.
Like, no, there was no social media. I didn't sign up for being bullied. Mm-hmm. I didn't sign up for being called names. I didn't sign up for people to wish, you know, horrible, the most horrendous things on you, on your family. Like,
That
doesn't come with the job.
It's and traumatizing.
I think, yeah.
You see tension between the NBA players and fans walking out, cursing them, calling them names.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's not okay. Hold them accountable as well.
Exactly.
You know, why do we need to continue to see not only you, I don't care about this. Like, there's 100 athletes right now going through this.
Thousands.
Right.
Thousands.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Every single day. And you said absolutely right. It's like everybody have bad days, mm-hmm. but as an athlete, you have to be always mm-hmm. on. I believe that athletes are entertainers and it's very important for the engagement with fans, but it has to be in respectful manner. You don't just go to somebody on the street and cuss them out and be like, okay, well, there's no repercussion.
We have to continue to have these conversations, and by us having these conversations, we're really changing the landscape, and we're holding people accountable. So, you fans, no more. No, we love you guys. We are entertainers. We love you guys. We appreciate it. But we're human.
Yeah.
We're human.
Yeah. How about college athletes finally getting paid?
Oh wow!
Like that's. I mean, I can't even understand how a coach of a football team in the university can get paid $7 million a year.
Seven?
Yeah.
There's some getting paid 10, 12 now.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
See, I have an old new. Yeah,
right.
12. What's really, I think, sad is that percentage of these athletes making it to the professional level where they're able with that skill to make money that will set them up
for
life. And they're giving up their health, they're giving up their time and family's time, the resources to even be able to go into college, the amount of resources that cuts there.
And then also, you can say like, you know, free education, but at the same time, the commitment that, you know, we have to make and it's really no option. You don't really have time. Like, you know, a lot of these athletes go to these schools and they're like, yeah, that, you know, that business degree that you want to do or you want to be an engineer, you don't have time for that.
Yeah.
So how am I setting myself up to actually have a life after my career?
Yeah.
You know, because there's only a handful of us that actually make it to the next level. So how are you putting me in position to take advantage of this free education?
Yeah.
It's a game changer now, this NIL, name, image, likeness, you know, this whole law that was passed and, you know, you're seeing athletes, you know, really participate in it. But I think we have to be careful because now what they're saying is the wild, wild west, like, okay, athlete, you can go monetize and capitalize off of your name, image, likeness, but why aren't we participating in the TV rights?
Yeah.
To me, it's a Band-Aid
because
what about the SEC, that media deal that they did with ESPN?
Okay. That's music to my ears, because we're going through exactly that in tennis, is to understand the governing body. And it's like, here's little piece, enjoy right. that, because we are great. We are so generous to give you this little part, so you should be, because you didn't have that before, so you should be right. should be happy about it. I'm like, no, I don't want this little piece. I want to understand the whole thing and have a percentage and ownership in athletes to understand that there should be partnerships.
You think we'll ever see women's sports, given the same opportunities as the men's sports and leagues?
I hope that if we teach our kids to understand that, they are going to be the generation that's going to advocate for that. Because I feel like we are starting it, and not we are the pioneers. There's right, been many many people in tennis. Billie Jean King is our hero. She's our hero. That's somebody who I look up to, not because of her titles, but what she has done for the sport. Mm-hmm. And I want to continue to push that needle further. Mm-hmm. And I think for me as a mom, to teach my son how to understand that people are equal, that's my job. And I hope if people focus on that, it will help to change the generation. Because we can't change our parents.
Right.
We can't change that stuff. Is the generation of us to start that,
right.
to teach younger generation how to be better than mm-hmm. us, and for them to move that forward. I want to ask you just 7 questions that I ask everybody on my show. It's very short answered, but it gets me to know you even better than after this chat.
Okay.
So are you ready for this? You're up to it?
I think I'm ready. Okay.
Okay. What is your favorite word?
I would say details.
Details.
And I do this as well, like details.
Yeah, you're Italian?
Yeah, details.
You know,
details.
This big. What is your least favorite word?
No.
No.
I don't tell me no. Tell a team this all the time. If I come in here with the idea, you know, I want to go to the deepest depths in the ocean, don't tell me I can't do it. Tell me how.
Yeah.
Let's find out how.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear no mm-hmm. at all.
What is one job besides what you do now or have done you would love to be able to do?
So I'll give a corny one, right? Like, I just think that, I mean, people know this. We talked about this, right? Like, I feel like my purpose on this planet is to help bridge the gap in the mental health community. So I would love to, you know, really lean more into that. Mm-hmm. I think my position in this whole thing is awareness and starting a conversation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, on the fun side, I'm trying to get into modeling.
Okay.
Like, my team is helping me with my swagger and my poses, right? Because, like, on the media side now, we're doing some cool things.
And Leslie made you take off your glasses.
Right.
Right?
That's what I'm saying. Thank you. You see? Like, yeah. I'm trying to find my swagger. I never did. I was corny. I was just like, I never leaned into fashion. So it's like, I'm trying to find my angles and stuff.
What is one job that you would never want to do?
Politician.
Yeah.
Well, no, I can see myself being disruptive in that space. I think what was uncomfortable for me, and it's crazy because I do it, but it was hard for me to go traditional linear television in sports, the way we talk about the athlete. That was very uncomfortable for me.
Yeah.
I'm doing it now. But even if I go back to that, right, like, I got to do it on my terms. I just don't think that, the way we cover the athlete is unhealthy to our conversation earlier.
Yeah.
And that's why I left my 5-day-a-week show.
Yeah.
Because it's like the people that's covering these sports, they have their own agendas. And also, you know, like the way we're talking about Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
But then I know you and your life. You have skeletons in your closet. I can't rock with that.
Yeah. What is one of the qualities of people that attracts you?
I like people that live a purpose-filled life. Or understand their purpose, or searching for their purpose, and then also like self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
We're not perfect, and being able for to look at yourself and apologize when you make a mistake. Like, self-awareness is a big deal.
Mm-hmm. And what is one of the qualities that kind of turns you off of people?
Egotistical. See, like you earlier in the show, you talked about entrepreneur. Like that's a word for me.
Okay.
Maybe that's my my least favorite word.
Okay.
But even that, like, right, keep that in. Don't edit that out.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I like people who are humble.
Okay.
Right.
And the last question is, let's say God exists and you arrive at the pearly gate, what would you like God to tell you?
Well done.
Well done.
You made the world better.
Mm. Mine was welcome.
Welcome. I like that. Welcome.
Mine was welcome. Because, you know, you'll let me go into heaven. I earned my way. Brandon, thank you so much. I can't thank you enough for the rawness of this conversation. I've said that off camera, but I'm going to say it on camera. I knew before we start talking that this is going to be a great episode, and I just can't wait for people to see, you know, this openness from both athletes, human beings, entrepreneurs, business people, just from really raw place that doesn't get talked about enough. So I really want to thank you for that. And that's a wrap.